The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
When we stand before God, we never stand alone. And how a right hand he makes him presence known. And if all of this be free, never on our own. When we stand before God, we never stand.
At the harbor, its final trip is set for departure. My captain calls me aboard. Uncoil the rope and draw up the anchor. Embark with hope. Victory.
Some highlights there from our newest musical. That's Ryan Malone, that last bit there. You heard from his wife initially. And if we have time later on in the program, we'll play a little bit of a longer montage from the Paul musical, Ambassador in Bonds. I think I heard over the weekend that we have something like 85 people that are participating in this production. So half the audience, I suppose, is up there on stage performing, and what a performance it was. I got to see it Saturday night and then again yesterday afternoon, and as was stressed to some of us on Saturday, the message in this particular musical, the words, so many of them coming right out of the Bible, so many of them coming right out of 2 Timothy, and what an appropriate message for today. I'll get into that here in just a second, but just to, again, say a few things about the show itself. Tonight is the final performance, so if you live anywhere in the Edmond area or Oklahoma City and you haven't seen that that production yet, there's plenty of tickets available for tonight's show. It starts at 7:30. So, as I say, a great message for the days we're living in, the craziness of today, and to just think about the strength and the stability that the Apostle Paul showed and displayed throughout his ministry. He was an ambitious man before his conversion, but when he converted over to the truth, he served God for the rest of his life. He didn't let anything stop him from serving God. And in that final epistle that he wrote to Timothy, in 2 Timothy, you can see it in chapter 1, verses 5 and 6. He's trying to remind Timothy of his upbringing. He references his mother and his grandmother and how that they were so diligent in teaching him as a young man, teaching him out of the scriptures. I want to bring that to your memory, he said. And don't forget about the power that God gave to you upon conversion. The power of God's Holy Spirit. Make sure that you stir it up. Make sure that you work each day to stir up the Spirit of God, that Spirit of power. Timothy was struggling a bit. Everyone, it seemed, was leaving the church. You can see that in the first chapter. Paul said, everyone in Asia has left. And of course, Paul himself was imprisoned. He was sentenced to death. So he was awaiting his execution. There were a lot of reasons to be discouraged. And Timothy was discouraged. Paul told him, look, you can survive these trials and tests if you stir up the Spirit of God. If you stir up this spirit of power, verse 7 of 2 Timothy 1 says, for God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. If you look at that Greek word for fear there, it means timidity or cowardice. God hasn't given us the spirit of timidity and cowardice, Paul said to Timothy. He's given us the spirit of power. He's given us an explosive power, spiritually speaking. And yet, there were a lot of brethren who were cowering in fear as those trials set in. There's another verse, by the way. There's no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. That's 1 John 4 and verse 18. Some memory verses to think on. And speaking of memory verses, all through 2 Timothy, it's just a short book, of course. Chapter 1 about the Spirit of God stirring up that Spirit, and that it's the Spirit of power and of love and of a sound mind. And then chapter 2, you read about being a good soldier for Christ, a workman when it comes to our Bible study. And on it goes. But just to continue this last verse here that I want to emphasize, 2 Timothy 1 and verse 8, it says, but be you not therefore ashamed of the testimony of our Lord, nor of me, his prisoner, Paul said, but be you partaker of the afflictions of the gospel according to the power of God. Don't be ashamed of me. Don't be ashamed of your prisoner, this prisoner, this apostle of God in jail. Now is not the time to be ashamed. Now is not the time to apologize for what we believe and teach. Now is the time to be courageous and bold. Now is the time to proclaim God's truth to this dying world. You can see why that this message is so appropriate for what we're experiencing today in 2020. Paul went through a lot of trials all through his 30-year ministry. He lists them out in 2 Corinthians 11, verses 24 through 27. Read through those verses and read about how many times Paul was beaten with stripes or with whips. Read about how he was beaten with rods even. He was stoned and left for dead in Lystra. He went through a shipwreck, multiple shipwrecks. It says there in that passage, 2 Corinthians 11, in journeyings often, in perils of water, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen. He says later on, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren. He says, in weariness and painfulness. Paul experienced a lot of weariness and pain in serving God. He talked about being hungry and thirsty, fasting often, and sometimes not by choice. He went through all of that. And what did he say in Romans 8? He said that, I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. It's not even worthy of comparing it to what God is about to give to us. So Paul really had a godly mindset when it came to trials and tests, persecutions and peril. He saw beyond the here and now. He kept his mind locked in on that spiritual realm. And the way that he finished up his book, I'll read some from the last chapter of 2 Timothy, if we have time at the end. What an inspiration. Even as he was approaching his execution, he was rejoicing in the great victory that he was able to claim because of Christ living in him. It's the message we need in this age of timidity and cowardice. Brad McDonald emailed me this morning. I guess he made it into Oklahoma last night, but he and I both live at Edstone. He said, boy, it looks like we got out of the UK just in time. You may have heard some of the reports at the news at the top of the hour. This is from CNN. It says Canada has become the latest country to halt flights from the UK following the discovery of a new variant of COVID-19, which is said by officials to spread faster than others. It says the new coronavirus variant, which prompted the UK government to impose a Tier 4 lockdown in London and Southeast England and tighten restrictions for all of England over the festive period, is out of control. That's according to the health secretary, Matt Hancock. That's the UK version of Tony Fauci. He can say or do no wrong. If Mr. Hancock says it, this is what we've got to do. We've got to lock it all down. And don't worry, if you're out of work for 8 months, you might get $600 in the mail. 8 months. All of these politicians on this side of the pond, they're still getting paid $130,000, $140,000, $150,000 during the pandemic. And what about the average, ordinary Americans or Britons? Well, if Matt Hancock says it, we've got to shut everything down. I mean, we're getting all these new cases of infections. It says the ensuing wave of travel bans has cut off UK travelers from much of Europe and other parts of the world. It also spurred a decision to hold an emergency governmental meeting on Monday, chaired by Prime Minister Johnson. The meeting will focus on international movement restrictions. So that's coming from the UK. It's a pretty long story in this CNN piece. And notice what it said. You have to get down to paragraphs 20 and 21. Keep that in mind, because most people are going to read the first two or three paragraphs that I just read to you. Oh, it's spreading. It's spreading like a wildfire. Tens of thousands of new infections. And this variant could spread faster than the others. And what do you read in paragraph 20? It says, as with other new variants of COVID-19, this one carries a genetic fingerprint that makes it easy to track, and it happens to be one that is now common. That does not mean the mutation has made it spread more easily, nor does it necessarily mean this variation is more dangerous. Now, the focus is on the infections, no longer on the deaths. It's the infections. And we'll talk about the deaths here in just a second. But as I said to you a week or two ago, the more and more you see people infected, the more and more survivors there are. I think it's something like 35 million now have gotten the flu and survived. This is paragraph 21. Multiple experts in the genetics and epidemiology of viruses are noting that this one could be just a lucky variation that's been amplified because of a super spreader event. It could be the mutation somehow makes it spread more easily without causing more serious illness. So this is why we've got to stop international travel. We've got to go into Tier 4. This is from Israel. Got this from our Jerusalem correspondent, Brent Nottigal. He said, this is the Times of Israel. Ministers were set to vote Monday, that's today, on a proposal to shut down all air travel to and from Israel in an attempt to prevent the spread of a new strain of the coronavirus. So you know where we were back in March. You know what this program was telling you about this Chinese flu. Here we are. What is it today? December 21st. We're almost into 2021. And Israel, the UK, These are leaders, leaders in Israel today discussing a complete and total lockdown with respect to air travel. Says Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said at the opening of the cabinet meeting that he was in favor of shutting down all inbound and outbound international flights. I intend to close the skies as quickly as possible, like in the first wave of the pandemic. So how long does it go on? How long does it continue? How much longer do people all over this world, Israelite nations in particular, how much longer will they be cowering in fear, living in fear? Imagine if the Apostle Paul said to Timothy, look, God hasn't given us the spirit of fear, but of power. But make sure you wear your mask. Timothy, make sure you cover up. Make sure you don't travel. You could be imperiled. Something bad could happen to you. I mean, this is the work of God, and we do need to do the work of God, but you've got to be careful. You can't push it too far, Timothy. It's a dangerous world out there, and it may come to a point where you just need to huddle up in the house and stay there. That's not the message that comes through from 2 Timothy. Not at all. That's not the message you read about in 2 Corinthians 11. Not at all. Far from it. Now, obviously, God wants us to use wisdom, and there are quarantine laws, for sure. If you are sick, if you have a contagious disease, well, of course, in the spirit of God's love, stay away from other people. But if you are healthy, if you feel healthy and strong, then serve God with all your might. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all of your might, says the Bible. I've meant to get to this piece for a while now, because it goes back to November 27, so it's almost a month old now. But we've just been consumed, basically, with the election fraud. But this was from PJ Media. They're reporting on this study that came out from Johns Hopkins University about a month or so ago. And it says here, conventional wisdom is that COVID-19 has caused thousands of deaths in the United States and nearly 1.5 million worldwide. This perception has been directly challenged by a study published by Johns Hopkins University on November 22nd. So just a month ago, how many of you have heard of this study that I'm about to read to you? It's challenging the conventional wisdom. And so what does big tech do with something like this? What does social media, what does the propaganda media do with a story like this? They censor it. They blot it out. They delete it. It says Genevieve Briand, assistant program director of the Applied Economics Master's Degree Program at Johns Hopkins University, critically analyzed the impact of COVID-19, what it had on the U.S. deaths, that is. According to Briand, the impact of COVID-19 on deaths in the United States can be fully understood by comparing it to the number of total deaths in the country. According to the study, in contrast to most people's assumptions, the number of deaths by COVID-19 is not alarming. In fact, it has relatively no effect on deaths in the United States. Here we are at the end of, you heard me correctly. Here we are at the end of 2020. This is from Johns Hopkins University. And we learn that the Wuhan flu has had no effect on total deaths. It says here, and it should come as no surprise that the study was deleted within days. So this study comes out. It challenges the conventional wisdom. It challenges the narrative that's been put out there constantly by the propaganda media and big tech. And so it's immediately deleted. And this PJ Media piece says, luckily, a backup copy remains at the Wayback Machine, and we can still read the study. So, I mean, it is like 1984, but at least the technology is there for us to still get our hands on the study, even if the media are not going to tell you anything about it. No, they cover this up. And then you get the long story from CNN today, and you've got to get down to paragraph 20 and 21 just to find out that this isn't really even that lethal. So how exactly did the study conclude that COVID-19 has had relatively no effect on deaths? And then it quotes from the study itself. After retrieving data on the CDC website, this lady came up with this study based upon the CDC, its own website. This is the official website of the Centers for Disease Control, put out by the U.S. government. It says Breon compiled a graph representing percentages of total deaths per age category from early February to early September, which includes the period from before COVID-19, before it was detected in the U.S., to after infection rates soared. Surprisingly, the deaths of older people stayed the same before and after COVID-19. Since COVID-19 mainly affects the elderly, experts expected an increase in the percentage of deaths in older age groups. However, this increase is not seen from the CDC data. In fact, the percentages of deaths among all age groups remain relatively the same. This is a point that I've noted before, just in comparing, and we're not quite done with the tabulation for 2020, obviously. But judging by the way that it was at the end of November, the overall deaths in the United States, it's running behind last year, 2019. It's a little bit behind last year, as I've noted before. If this is the pandemic that the media say it is, where is the spike in deaths? This woman brings out that you don't even see the spike in deaths among the elderly. Isn't that astounding? According to Breon, the reason we have a higher number of reported COVID-19 deaths among older individuals than younger individuals is simply because every day in the U.S., older individuals die in higher numbers than younger individuals. Did you know this? Did you know that every day there's more older people who die than younger people? It's happening every day, every week, every month, every year. Breon's analysis, it says, found that the range of deaths among the older population has remained within the range of the past years. And it quotes her. She says, every year in the U.S., when we observe the seasonal ups and downs, we have an increase of deaths due to all causes. And then it quotes again from the study. This is just one last bit that I'll give to you. It says, when Breon looked at the 2020 data during that seasonal period, COVID-19-related deaths exceeded deaths from heart disease. This was highly unusual since heart disease has always prevailed as the leading cause of deaths. Now, here we get into, you know, about the comorbidities and the people that have these other diseases. And now they're all being checkmarked COVID-19. Now it's Pearl Harbor every day. It's 9/11 every day. Two 9/11s every day. That's what we hear. It says, however, when taking a closer look at the death numbers, she noted something strange. As Breon compared the number of deaths per cause during that period in 2020 to 2018, she noticed that instead of the expected drastic increase across all causes, there was a significant decrease in deaths due to heart disease. Even more surprising, as seen in the graph below, this sudden decline in deaths is observed for all other causes. So we've got a sudden spike in COVID-19 deaths, and all of the other causes of death are plummeting. And the overall rate of death is about the same. In fact, it's a little bit lower than it was last year. So what are we to do? What are we to do with this information? Well, for one, we immediately delete this study. That's where we start. Get rid of that. And then, two, we take all of these extreme measures. Shut down travel. Shut down communities. shut down the economy, and strap on the mask. I played this clip for you from the Los Angeles mayor, Eric Garcetti. He said this a couple of weeks ago. Move ahead to clip three.
My message couldn't be simpler. It's time to hunker down. It's time to cancel everything.
Isn't that a comforting message? Dear beloved Timothy, it's time to cancel everything. It's time to shut it all down. It's time to stop what you're doing and to just hunker down. Listen to the governor of Maryland, Governor Hogan. He said this a while back as well, clip one.
Which part don't you understand? You wear the mask. There's no constitutional right to walk around without a mask.
There's no constitutional right to go without a mask. This is what the framers had in mind. It's embedded into the Constitution. You have to wear a mask. We, the people of the United States of America, must wear a mask. These are the leaders in Israel today. It's very sad, isn't it? Very sad to see this. So much timidity and fear, so much cowardice. And all of these, as I noted earlier, all of these officials, they're still, you know, they're still getting their paychecks. Everybody, all the people that are the most radical, the most extreme, they come from where? The media, the political class, celebrities, athletes. And so many of these people are just making tons of money, all kinds of money. And who gets left behind? Well, the political class says to them, don't you worry, you've got $600 coming. We're going to take care of you. We're putting together a package of $900 billion in aid. Now, we're adding $1.4 trillion. A lot of pork barrel spending, all kinds of other things that we've got to get the money out there to keep the government going. We've got to keep government going because government is expanding. Government is growing. Wearing a mask is your patriotic duty. It's your constitutional duty. Don't question. Don't read this study from Johns Hopkins. We've deleted it. And we suggest you don't go to the Wayback Machine. We don't want you to even read that stuff. Well, it comes from the CDC site. Well, never mind that. Just do what the CDC spokespeople tell you to do. Never mind the facts. Never mind the statistics. Here's the Surgeon General from a few weeks ago as well on wearing masks. Clip two.
Wearing a mask is an instrument of freedom.
It's an instrument of freedom, says the man who months ago said, wearing a mask, you know, I wouldn't recommend it because you're going to be adjusting it and your face, you know, your hands get close to your face and then germs can spread that way. You should watch clips of people speaking on the news when they have their mask. Just count how many seconds until you see them adjust the mask. It's an interesting little game that reveals a lot about how close our hand. I do it because the masks move around and they're not super comfortable. And sometimes they'll slip under the nose. So you're adjusting it. You're doing this while you're communicating with others. I mentioned that that study from New York, I think it was the National Pulse. Oh, yes, it's right here. It says, if New York were its own country, it would have more coronavirus deaths per capita than any other nation in the world. And so what do? Well, we immediately give the good governor of New York an Emmy. He's an award-winning governor. He's already wrote. And this is funny, too. This is because New York's going back, like the UK. They're going back to Tier 4 or whatever it would be, the equivalent. After Governor Cuomo released his book about how great New York handled the COVID crisis. And then here it comes again. More shutdowns. Sam gave you this piece from Politico. Just again, to come back to these verses in 2 Timothy 1. where Paul said to Timothy, God hasn't given us the spirit of fear, Timothy. You don't need to be afraid. You don't need to be ashamed of God's truth, of God's work. Just go forward. Go forward in service to God. This was from June 15th, 2016, so I'll take you back 4.5 years. President Trump was the, I believe he might have been, he's the presumptive Republican nominee at this point. So the Republicans in name only, they had to accept that Donald Trump was going to be their nominee. And this was very difficult for so many of them because he was not establishment. He came out of the world of business, real estate. And he shocked the Republican Party first. And then, of course, a few months after this article, he shocked the entire nation, the entire world, in fact, by winning the presidency in November of 2016. But listen to this article from June of 2016. This is before he became president. It says the presumptive Republican nominee rants against GOP leaders, that would be the Republican Party, saying they should just be quiet if they can't support him. He didn't have much support in his own party. And his suggestion was, look, if you can't support your nominee, then how about if you just keep quiet? And then it quotes him, you know, the Republicans, honestly, folks, our leaders, he said, our leaders have to get tougher. The leaders of the Republican Party have to get tougher, said Donald Trump. This is too tough to do it alone. But you know what? This is quoting Donald Trump from June of 2016. He says, this is too tough to do it alone. But you know what? I think I'm going to be forced to do it alone. Those are pretty prescient remarks, given what we've seen in the last 4.5 years. Where is the toughness? Where is the toughness in the Republican Party? I mean, you certainly see a certain amount of deranged toughness in the Democrat Party. They are going forward. I saw something where I think it was Bernie Sanders said that we've got to go on offense. We've been playing defense for too long. It's exactly the opposite. The radical left goes forward with their Marxist propaganda. They go forward. They'll destroy anything in their path. It's the Republicans who are weak. It's the conservatives who are weak. Here was Donald Trump calling upon his party to be tougher. Well, this article, it mentions the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. He said, this is quoting McConnell, I'm not going to be commenting on the presidential candidates today. A statement that comes after recent condemnations of Trump's attack on an American judge over his Mexican heritage and his proposal to temporarily ban Muslims from entering the country. So President Trump comes along and says, look, we can't just have, you know, no borders, no security. And I that didn't sit well with the Republican Party. Mitch McConnell, the propaganda media, they really came out and attacked Donald Trump for some of these policies, these statements. And so what did the leaders in the Republican Party do? They ran for cover. They hunkered down. McConnell says, I'm not going to comment on anything with respect to Trump until after the election. I mean, this was in June. It says here, Senate Majority Whip John Cornyn on Tuesday went a step further than McConnell, telling Politico he will no longer talk about Trump until after November 8th. So here were all these Republicans throwing a fit in June. So you've got June, middle of June to July, August, September, October, November, 4.5 months. I'm not even going to talk to Donald Trump. I'm not going to talk about Donald Trump until after the election. These people were hoping Hillary Clinton would win, and they were in the Republican Party. And you see a lot of it still to this day. Republicans who are happy to see the fake president-elect, Joe Biden. God has a few more things to say about that, by the way. Here's another. House Speaker Paul Ryan on Tuesday joined with President Barack Obama. Let me just reread that. Now, Paul Ryan's now, he's out of office. But at the time, he was the Speaker of the House. He was in Nancy Pelosi's position. He said, this is back in June 2016, he joined with President Barack Obama and other Democrats in calling out Trump for his anti-Muslim rhetoric, saying, I do not think a Muslim ban is in our country's interest. So there was Paul Ryan running for cover, just like John Cornyn, just like Mitch McConnell, and just like so many we see to this day. And what was President Trump telling the party back then? He said, look, we've got to get tougher. We can't do this alone. Or maybe I will have to do it alone. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Hello? Hello? Can you hear me?
Do you know me? Do you love me? Do you know I exist? Do you exist? You know what it feels like to not be heard. You know what it feels like to not be answered. Is this how you feel toward God? You don't have to feel alone. You don't have to be distant from God. You don't have to wonder if He will ever answer. You just have to learn how to pray. There is a God, and there are many wrong ways to communicate with Him, but there is a right way. Once you learn how to pray, you will break through and converse with your very Creator. You will experience the most fulfilling, meaningful, thrilling relationship you can imagine. God will hear you. God will love you. God will answer you. If you learn how to pray, go to thetrumpet.com and search how to pray.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Axios had a story on Friday about the acting defense secretary. His name is Chris Miller. And Miller had ordered, according to Axios, he had ordered a Pentagon-wide halt to cooperation with the transition of President-elect Biden. So this had quite a few conservative sites wondering what is going on. What is going on if the Pentagon chief is all of a sudden cutting the ties with the so-called incoming administration. Axios noted that this decision really did shock officials in the government and in the Biden transition team as well. Now, he came out later and said it was a mutually agreed upon holiday. You've got the Christmas holiday coming up this week. But that wasn't the take coming from the Biden transition team. So what added to the intrigue here is that after he made this statement on Friday, then he met with President Trump at the White House Friday afternoon. So that was going on Friday. And also happening on Friday, CNN talked about this meeting that Sidney Powell, she's the attorney that severed ties with the Trump campaign team of attorneys a while back and just went it alone with her own Kraken, as she liked to say. But she was in the White House together with General Mike Flynn, meeting again with the president. And from what we can gather certain reports talk about how that it got heated, and you have General Flynn and Sidney Powell, and they've been pretty open in public about the powers that President Trump has, particularly with the Insurrection Act, and that if he wanted to, he could go and seize so many of these controversial Dominion machines and all of that software and all the glitches. There's only that forensic examination in Antrim County up in northern Michigan. Outside of that, what about the machines in Georgia? What about the machines in Arizona? In fact, in Arizona, there was a subpoena. I think it was coming from the Arizona State Legislature. A subpoena on the machines in Maricopa County. And the election board in that county voted 4-1 to disregard the subpoena. They just said, we're not going to do it. So there was a subpoena issued. You've got to turn over these machines. This is what the government of the state says you must do. And these election officials said, nope, can't do it. We're not going to do it. If they were innocent, if they did everything by the book, if those machines ran flawlessly, then those officials would have voted 5-0. Well, of course, here they are. Take a look. Do whatever you want. Everything was above board, and you'll see that. As it is, it's almost a unanimous 5-0 response. Just one individual stood up and said, hey, we've got to turn these over. The subpoena's been issued. But no, they've got to keep those under lock and key. They've got to try to run out the clock. Just get to the finish line. Never mind the cheating. Never mind the forensic examinations, the forensic audit. Just keep it hidden. Just keep it in the dark. Just as I said on the program Friday, we're told to just move on. We've just got to move on. Don't contest. Don't ask questions. Just do what you're told. Strap on the mask. Never mind voter fraud. No evidence of any kind of criminality. Just move on and do what you're told. Well, we'll see what comes from that meeting. I think Sidney Powell was also seen coming out of the White House last night. There was some chatter that perhaps the president is going to use her with some kind of a special counsel investigation. We will see. Here was Chris Christie's response on CNN. He was asked by Wolf Blitzer about the president meeting with Mike Flynn and the president meeting with Sidney Powell. And here's what the Republican, keep this in mind, the Republican Chris Christie, here's how he responded. Clip 5.
Remember the thing that Ronald Reagan used to say. He used to say personnel is policy. And what he meant was that the people who surround you and what they do will help to determine policy. This is why someone like Michael Flynn never belongs anywhere near the White House, let alone inside the Oval Office, and his lawyer, Sidney Powell. Now, I've been talking about this since the transition in 2016, how dangerous I thought General Flynn was. I sat with him in security briefings with the then candidate, Donald Trump, and then with President Donald Trump. And I will tell you that he is not fit to be giving advice to anyone. And I think the best advice I could give the president is keep Michael Flynn and Sidney Powell out of the Oval Office, and then those really bad ideas will stay out of the Oval Office as well.
That's what the Republicans, most of them, say. Keep those two out of the Oval Office. Keep them away from Donald Trump. General Flynn is dangerous, says Chris Christie. This is the same General Flynn who had his life nearly destroyed by the radical left, by Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, John Brennan, Jim Comey, James Clapper, and the list goes on. They came after General Flynn. He didn't lie. He didn't do anything wrong. And then they threatened his son. They threatened General Flynn's family. And so he finally admitted to some process crime and was on his way to jail were it not for the Attorney General Barr dropping those charges. And even when the charges were dropped, this radical judge tried to keep the persecution going. And Flynn and Sidney Powell fought against it. They could have surrendered. They could have cowered in fear. They could have responded with timidity and cowardice, but they didn't. And here is Chris Christie saying the dangerous players, it's not Peter Strzok, it's not Barack Obama, it's not James Clapper, it's not John Brennan, it's not Jim Comey, certainly not Jim Comey, it's not Chris Krebs, it's not any of those people. It's General Flynn and his advice to Donald Trump is stay away from Flynn and Powell. It's the same advice that Barack Obama would give. Barack Obama would give the advice and then work with his shadow government to destroy these people. He's had that as a track record. Keep them out. So the president clearly is not quitting. You can see that from the reports we saw on Friday and then through the weekend. He's not quitting. And you just keep seeing more and more stories. Close advisors. Mark Meadows now, supposedly, I don't know for sure, we're not in the inner circle, but he's supposedly urging the president to just give in, to just surrender, to just throw in the towel. Look, we've got to move on. Peter Navarro, I didn't have time to get to this on Friday, but he released his study. Again, talk about studies that are ignored. I gave you the Johns Hopkins study from a month ago. And then Peter Navarro comes out with his report. Immaculate Deception. It's like a 36-page study on all the fraud that went on in the presidential election. This was the National Pulse, its take on that report, which came out, I believe, last Thursday. It says the report explains how outright voter fraud, including the large-scale manufacturing of fake ballots, bribery, and dead voters, and ballots cast by ineligible voters, such as felons and illegal aliens, ballots counted multiple times, and illegal out-of-state voters. And one of the most shocking claims that he makes in this report, and this has been made by others, but he shows how that this was coordinated because it all happened simultaneously. You know, the vote counting stopping and then all of these shenanigans, the water main break that turned out to be a urinal overflow. And then the spike at 2, 3 a.m. in the morning. All of these Biden votes that showed up. The poll says Navarro also alleges that ballot mishandling via a lack of adequate voter ID check, signature matching abuses, backdating of ballots, a broken chain of custody, and more jeopardized election results. It says contestable process fouls such as the abuse of poll watchers and observers allowing improperly registered people to vote and illegal ballot curing also plagued every swing state. And it quotes Navarro as saying, the weight of evidence and patterns of irregularities uncovered in this report are such that it is irresponsible for anyone, especially the mainstream media, to claim that there is no evidence of fraud or irregularities. How irresponsible it would be to persist with this message, this propaganda, that there's no evidence. This was Peter Navarro on Fox News, I believe, Friday, clip 4.
What I gleaned was this coordinated strategy to effectively stuff the ballot box with mail-in and absentee ballots, coupled with at times the destruction of Trump ballots. What I found, interestingly, is there's no silver bullet, but this was death by a thousand cuts, or these six dimensions, things like fraud, ballot mishandling, you had vote machine irregularities, statistical anomalies, process fouls. The other thing, Martha, that really jumps out at you is that the slim Biden victory margins, the alleged victory margins, are dwarfed by the amount of illegal ballots in question.
All these slim victories in these swing states, and these tens of thousands of illegal ballots. The Trump campaign team, by the way, filed a petition with the Supreme Court. This is the first one coming direct from the Trump campaign. There's others, of course, from other people, other groups. But all of these slim margin victories, they're dwarfed by the amount of illegal ballots in question, says Navarro. Theft by a thousand cuts. You look at the other side, or the ones that are responsible for this fraud, for this theft. And last week, week before, well, we're getting more and more of the text messages and the emails revealed from Strzok and Page and all of these deep state operatives that tried to destroy the Trump presidency, that tried to overturn the results of the 2016 presidency. They never accepted that. One thing that is really revealing about these text messages that have been revealed over the last few weeks is that you see how the deep state, you see how the radical left was working together, hand in hand, with the propaganda media. You have these messages coming out from people like Peter Strzok, and he's talking about Clapper and his interactions with CNN, and when CNN's coming out with this story. On January 6th, this goes back to 2017, that was the day that they supposedly gave the supposed defense briefing. It wasn't a defense briefing. It was actually a hook. It was a setup. They were trying to give CNN and others something to run with because the Steele dossier had absolutely no credibility. So here was Comey and Obama and all of these people setting up the incoming president of the United States, President-elect Donald Trump. And this was a message on January the 9th. I think CNN ran with the story on the 10th, if my memory serves me. But Strzok texted Lisa Page the day before. Story no longer Sciutto, that would be Jim Sciutto of CNN. Now Evan Perez, he's also of CNN. Internal nervousness about the nature of allegations. This is quoting Peter Strzok. He said, also Carl Bernstein. Yes, that Carl of Woodward and Bernstein fame. Called OPA, said he got a dossier from John McCain. And then Lisa Page replied, awesome, let Carl run it down then. These are people at the FBI talking about all these reporters and what they had in the dossier, what they were going to report, when they were going to report it. Have we ever seen anything like, why is the FBI, why are they so familiar with all of these inner workings in big media, in the propaganda media? It's because they were working toward the same end. They had the same goal, and it was to destroy Donald Trump. And they are still on offense. They are still on attack. And these are the people that Chris Christie wants President Trump and his team to surrender to. You go back to that theme in 2 Timothy. It's awesome, really. God says to us, you've got to be courageous. Even in dangerous times, Paul said in chapter 3 of that book, 2 Timothy 3, that perilous times are coming upon us. And we've got to be courageous. We've got to be tough. We need to be tougher. That's what President Trump was saying about his own party in 2016. Paul said in 2 Timothy 4, verse 5, he said, but watch you in all things, endure afflictions, do the work of an evangelist, make full proof of your ministry. He told Timothy, look, you're going to have to endure some afflictions, but just keep your focus on the prize. That's what I did. I focused on the crown. And I've fought a good fight, and I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.